This morning, as we hear Jesus speaking to his disciples, he promises them where two or three are gathered, he will be in the midst of them. Famous words, comforting words. Many people have over the years used that to really bolster the idea that the small can be mighty in the Lord, right? But the other side of that, of course, and this is the context in which Jesus is speaking this to the disciples, where two or three humans are gathered, there is a good chance for some conflict. Sometime, one time or another, conflict. Whenever we gather in groups large and small, conflict. And we have some very human ways, very unhealthy ways of handling conflict, do we not? We can pretend nothing happened and hope it magically disappears. People say, forgive but don't forget. That's keeping a careful mental ledger so the grievance can be produced at exactly the right time, sometime in the future, right? We may go around and recruit allies and assemble a team and make sure everybody knows our position first. Or we can, at worst, perhaps shame the person publicly so people are clear, everyone knows who the problem is. Christians also go to the other extreme. I remember Rabbi Edwin Friedman. He was a man who wrote a seminal book about taking family emotion system therapy analysis and putting it on synagogues and churches. The idea that when people gather, there's an emotional system and it has a lot more dynamics than usually we're aware of. But one time he was presenting to a Christian audience, a church or maybe a synod convention, I forgot which, and he said, one of the problems with Christians is that you think Jesus was just a nice guy. Right? Too often in the church, we forgive too quickly and we don't address the harm. We confuse keeping the peace with making the peace. Jesus is loving and forgiving and merciful, compassionate, caring, but Jesus is hardly conflict avoidant. We hear that in again and again in the Gospels. So Jesus offers this, a three-step program. Should someone sin against you? First is you go to that person. You let them know that there has been a hurt on your part. Right? Go to them first. Talk to them, not about them. And I'm borrowing some of the language of the Old Testament and what it required to have witnesses in a court case. Jesus says, bring two or three witnesses, right? Bring people with you. And these are trusted people, hopefully objective people. These aren't your yes people, right? Your yes men, your yes ladies. Bring people to listen, to witness what is going on, and perhaps offer that objective viewpoint. But that still doesn't work. You offer to a wider community. Excuse me. We believe by this time when Matthew was written, that yes, the first Christians were still going to the synagogue, considering themselves Jews, but perhaps they met at other times in house churches. This is what we believe, this is to whom we believe Jesus was speaking. Bring it up to the congregation. Have the congregation weigh in to help resolve the conflict. All of this is to the goal of restoration. Of regaining the other. The notion that sin separates, that sin keeps folks apart in isolation. Jesus is saying all of this, that the conflict might be put down just so there is recovering and relationship. As I struggle with Sisyphean? What's the guy that rolled the ball up the boulder? Sisyphus. Okay, and the boulder kept coming down.
Yes.
That's my task, trying to learn class management in middle school. And one of the things that I've been reading over the summer is kind of a positive discipline approach. Right? We are a long way away in pedagogy from bringing out the ruler and, you know, slapping people's knuckles or whatever. It's called restorative practices. You ever heard this phrase? Apparently it's a big thing in business, too. The idea is that you don't just, you know, give punitive punishment. You just don't lash out and say, stop it, knock it off. The idea is you engage the person with the idea of restoration of relationship. So you ask, what happened? Right? What did you think you did? Because somebody else isn't probably seeing the same way. What were you thinking and feeling when you did that? Who do you think your behavior affected and how? What needs to happen to make things right? The focus of this is on truth, it's on responsibility, it's on the harm, but it's also on the repair. Because the final step is this restoration also requires reentry. Right? You talk about what happens after the conflict. How does the person become a part of the community again? It may require an apology, changed behavior. It may require restitution, rebuilt trust. It may require establishing new boundaries. Restoration does not mean everything goes back to the way it was before. There's an acknowledgement of what had happened and a new path built forward. I did try this past week a bit. Young gentleman couldn't sit in his seat, crawling around underneath his desk, taking his pen and realizing that the spring could make projectiles. This is in the eighth grade. So I try not to yell or to raise my voice or to be, you know, old school. I tried to gently remind him of learning posture were to have, and afterwards I went up and I tried it a little bit. Hey, what was going on? You know, we're not off to a great start. What can we do different? In a way, you know, I made baby steps. We'll see. But I love how that re-entry and that repair of relationship is part and parcel, the whole thing. Right. Quite often in other in situations we find ourselves, it's all about stopping the hurt or stopping the pain or at least making ourselves feel better. This really focuses on relationship. So Jesus does promise to be with us in the midst of all our life, in the midst of our worship and our praise. But in the context, Jesus promises to be with us when we're talking about conflict and reconciliation. Christ is not only present with us when we gather for worship, but Christ is with us when we sit down, when we have the courage to address someone whom we feel has wronged us. Christ is there in the midst of that conversation. Not to judge who's right or wrong, not to make sure somebody that wins, but ultimately that the relationship is restored to a healthy way. Years ago in seminary, there was a fellow student that I didn't treat too well. It was something that came up between us. That's a whole other story. Definitely not going to tell it while I'm being recorded. And I never tried to reconcile. He graduated a year before me. I pushed it, buried it down. Years later, I got to see him, and I thought about this over the years and realized that, you know, I was being a jerk. And I went up, reintroduced myself, apologized. You know what? He forgave me. But then he said something very interesting, something along the lines of, he believes the people with whom we are estranged in this life may be the very people we are seated beside at God's great eternal feast in heaven. The idea that even though I had wronged him, he had hopes that one day all would be restored, including our relationship. Our present estrangements from one another are not necessarily the final word. And that gives me hope. Because dealing with conflict is a difficult, difficult thing. But that's God. God is always about restoring what has been broken. Again and again in the scriptures, we hear of a God who seeks the lost, who yearns to bring people home, a God that forgives, a God that repairs, a God that raises what is dead, a God that promises one day to make all things new. Restoration isn't about pretending the brokenness never happened. It is about trusting in God's work through us for healing, repairing, reconciling, and making new. Whenever we work towards restoration with a brother or a sister, we are participating in God's very life-giving work. The work that God has been doing all along since life began, and promises God will continue doing until this timeline ends. Jesus says, if you go and you deal with the conflict in a loving way, you may regain that one. Not defeated, not embarrassed, not discarded, but regained. Right? The one that is we are having difficulty with may be the one sitting beside us at the feast. It gives me hope. Reconciliation eludes us in this life. We praise a God whom we know it is not beyond God's power to bring that reconciliation to completion in the life to come. Amen.